Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started? Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Andrew Mason. I'm a Principal Group Program Manager in the Windows Server organization, where I'm responsible for server core, minimal server interface, and a few other pieces of functionality in Windows Server. And welcome to deploying Windows Server 2012 from Bare Metal, Server Core, and Minimal Server Interface, and more. Very broad topic. So I have scoped it down a little bit, and hopefully we will cover the areas that you're most interested in. So I'm going to talk some about the various deployment methods. There hasn't been a lot of change there. There's been some modifications and some improvements. So we'll talk some about what's new in those areas, particularly around Windows deployment services. Talk about the Windows Server 2012 installation options. Talk some about minimal server interface. And also look at how you can minimize your on-disk footprint using features on demand, which is particularly useful if you're deploying a lot of virtual machines or have limited disk space in your environment. And I made it through the agenda and didn't even mention Server Core on that slide. So the first way to do setup is obviously running setup itself. But this is really the high-touch method. And setup in Server 2012 is essentially the same as setup in Windows Server 2008 R2. There's been some tweaks to the wording in the dialog boxes during setup and some speed improvements in the underlying engine, but other than that, it's essentially the same. So any scripts and tools you may have that you've been using to deploy Windows Server 2008 R2, you can continue to use those with Windows Server 2012. So not a lot has changed in the actual setup process itself. Then on the light touch deployment side, there's the Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. It's available in a release preview version up there on that link. And essentially what this is useful for is if you have a lot of identical hardware that you want to deploy the same image to. So what you can do is install the deployment toolkit, get it all configured how you want it, and then you install a reference server. So deploy Windows Server, running through setup, do all the configuration and everything you want on the system, install any drivers you may need in there. Then you use the deployment toolkit to capture an image of that, and then you can use that to deploy across your servers. Now, it has some automation capabilities in it, but really if you tie this in with System Center, if you have that in your environment, you can fully automate and make this a zero-touch deployment option. Then inbox with Windows Server, there's the Windows Deployment Services. So this is a role that's been around since Windows Server 2003 R2, and it allows you to do Pixie boot on your servers and have it pull down the images, one of the images you've defined on your WDS server. So reliable, like I said, it's been around since Server 2003 R2. It's proven, it's used both internally by Microsoft as well as by a bunch of external customers. So internally, our IT department uses it to deploy desktops to all Microsoft employees. It's also used in a lot of our data centers to push out our server images. And then our test labs also use it quite a bit to deploy new client and server builds as well as other things across the test labs. It is very scalable as well. So there is a white paper on TechNet that talks about scaling up to 300 clients. There are customers that are using up to 1,000 clients with a single WDS server, so it is very scalable. It can be used to deploy lots of systems across your environment. It's also powerful and simple, so there's a lot of flexibility and extensibility built into it, and as we'll see, I'll get into some of that as well as some of the improved manageability. There's been a lot of enhancements to the MMC console and what you can actually do using the UI tools in Server 2012. So this slide shows a high-level view of the WDS deployment process. So I'll sort of step through this and use this to explain some of the improvements that have been made in WDS. So the first box there is all around planning your WDS deployment, getting it all configured and diagnosing and figuring out if there are any changes you want to make to your environment. So in that area, there are four major improvement areas, and I have some slides that will go into those in some more detail. So with Server 2012 WDS, there's now a standalone server mode. So no longer do you have to have Active Directory and use Active Directory as your data store. You can now set it up without Active Directory and use a local data store. And the management tools, both the command line and the MMC, support this. So you can fully use this the same as you would if you were Active Directory integrated or not. On the MMC improvement side, you can now do all your device management through the MMC. You no longer have to use the command line tool. There's also a client unattend file generator, so you can generate your WDS unattend files from the UI. There's two new server properties exposed in the UI. Now, if you're familiar with WDS, these were actually available previously if you knew about them and went into the registry and changed them. They're now available via the UI, and so you can set the max TFTP block size for when it's pushing down the boot image, and you can also configure dynamic port, UDP port policy. So by default, it uses dynamic ports. You can configure it to use a static port range if you want using this. There's also the ability to set image priority. In previous versions of WDS, the images shown on the boot screen were sorted by architecture and the file name of the image. So oftentimes the sort order may have looked a little odd to both the administrator as well as the users trying to select the image they want. Now you can, through the UI, actually put priorities on them, and that will be the order they're shown in the UI. And then there's also an expected deployment results wizard. So those of you familiar with PowerShell, this is kind of like what if for WDS. So rather than configuring WDS and then pushing out your image to a client or server box and seeing what the results are and how the behavior works, you can actually use what if instead of having to go through the whole setup process and see the results of that. Now, a big area of extensibility is metadata support in WDS. So there's this new piece of functionality called, on the second bullet there, the WDS infrastructure for custom deployments. Sometimes you'll see this in some of the documentation, abbreviated as WICD. And what this allows you to do is you can actually define metadata for your devices, your drivers, and your images. And then some of the things you can do with it is during the WinPE phase of your WDS deployments, is you can have scripts that run, that query that metadata, look at the system, and make decisions based on which images should be deployed, based on what hardware is available in the system, or what drivers to install or to leave out of the image. So it gives you a lot of capabilities that previously you would have had to create a custom Pixie provider for. So now you can do this all by attaching metadata through the UI to your different devices and groups and images. There's been a lot put into diagnosability as well. So now there are some new tracelog capabilities. So it now supports ETW-based tracelogs. There's support for a slash trace parameter. Setup error.log and setup action.log are still available, so those are still there. But WDS has added some tracing and logging functionality on top of that. And there are also a lot of new performance counters. In previous versions of WDS in Server 2008 R2, there were 19 performance counters, now there's over 50, so you can actually look at different things based on IPv4 versus IPv6, your images, your Pixie boot process, so there's a lot of more performance capabilities or monitoring capabilities with WDS. Then once you boot with Pixie, essentially you've got your WDS server up and running, your servers boot with Pixie, and WDS will push down the boot program. So that's what gets you started in the process. And in that area, there's now UEFI support for x86 machines. So for your client deployments, you now have UEFI support. And the UEFI and BIOS settings have been separated. In 2008 R2 WDS, it was a single collection of settings. They're separated now. There's also IPv6 support for Pixie boot. So it does require a certain level of firmware, and it does require a stateful DHCP v6, but it is now supported, and IPv6 is supported throughout all the WDS phases. So during TFTP, multicast, and setup, you can use IPv6 to push out your images. Now, once the boot program's down, essentially what happens is the system boots into WinPE, and then it starts the TFTP transfer of the OS loader. So here there are some networking improvements to improve performance and eliminate some of the issues that have happened with past releases. So some of the TFTP enhancements are that there's now a dynamic transmission window for TFTP. So it used to be that WDS used a 4-block TFTP window. That caused some problems with some network adapters out there. So what they've done is it's now a dynamic TFTP window, so it will resize based on performance on the network and the response it's getting back from the clients. So what would happen with a four-block fixed window is sometimes clients wouldn't get all four blocks and acknowledge those, and so then the server would sit there and wait for that transmission to time out and then keep retrying. And so it oftentimes slowed down the deployment process. So the dynamic window, it will resize dynamically during the transmission process. This is actually tripled performance on gigabit networks, so going from about 8 megabytes to between 20 and 30 megabytes per second. So it significantly improved the performance here. There's also now shared UDP port allocation, which really increases scalability. Previously, on the earlier slide, I mentioned scalable, the 300 clients. There are customers out there doing up to 1,000. Well, 1,000 was sort of the limit in most cases because it was using 16 ports per client connection to a WDS server, and that pretty much would max out the available dynamic UDP ports. Now there are 16 ports used across all the clients. So you can scale much more highly there. And there are performance counters that let you look at the port allocation. There's also now a shared client buffer. So rather than each client getting a buffer for its download, if it detects that, you know, client one is downloading the WIM file and client two is requesting the install.wim, it will use the same buffer for that rather than having duplicate buffers. Again, freeing up your memory usage on your server and improving the performance. And then once WIM PE is up and running, that's when it actually gets into setup and starts downloading and applying the image of server. So here we have in-place WIM multicast apply. So the way WDS worked in Windows Server 2008 R2 was it would download the WIM file to the local hard drive, write it all out to the hard drive, and then run setup. So essentially you needed enough space on your local machine to have a copy of the WIM file as well as for setup to write out everything that's being installed. So it required additional disk space on your client. It also took more time because it would download the whole thing, write it to the local disk, and then run setup. Now what it will do is it will actually start running setup from memory. So it will start downloading the WIM. Once it gets enough into memory, it starts running setup from that rather than having to write things to the disk multiple times. So this greatly speeds up the installation time. It also requires less disk footprint. It does require a minimum of 2 gigabytes of RAM on whatever systems you're using WDS to install on, because it needs that RAM for the in-memory use of the WIM file. Multicast performance has also been improved. So in previous releases of WDS, it had a block size for multicast that was larger than an Ethernet frame, and so it would get broken up and then have to get reassembled on the other end. Well, it turns out that there were some network hardware and NICs out there that were unable to handle that and did not properly reassemble the frame. So what they've done in WDS and Server 2012 is there's the multicast block is now the size of an Ethernet packet. So rather than having to break it apart and reassemble it, it fits all in an Ethernet packet, eliminating any issues with networking hardware out there. And there have been some improvements in the transmission and control algorithm on gigabit networks, mainly around supporting multi-core systems. So it greatly improves and eliminates congestion and gets more saturation of the bandwidth. Then there's also VHDX apply. So what this does is you can actually use the new VHD file format in Windows Server 2012, set up a VHD and VHDX file and use that to apply the image onto a machine. And what this does is the WIM file is file-based, so essentially it has to download each file, store that, write out the file, whereas this is sector-based. So once it gets a bit in, it will write that out to disk. So it's much faster, allows you to do multiple partitions across the system if desired. Now, WDS does not actually support creating the VHDX. You have to use the Hyper-V tools or Diskpart or things like that, but all the client tools do support it. So that's some of the changes and ways of deployment that are available with Windows Server 2012. So now I'm going to dive into some on the various deployment options and some of the changes that have happened around that. So how many people are familiar with Server Core or have used Server Core in the past? All right? Good mix of hands. That's good to see. So in Windows Server 2012, if you've installed the release candidate or the beta, you may have noticed that during setup, it's now the default deployment option. So it's the first one on the list. It's highlighted. If you don't pay careful attention, just click on the next button all the way through, you'll end up with Server Core installed. That's because Server Core is really the primary installation option that we want everybody to be using. We're moving away from running the GUIs locally on the server. You have the remote server administration tools, or RSAT, that you can use to remotely manage your servers. PowerShell is now available and installed by default on Server Core with the 2300 commandlets you've probably heard referenced in various talks throughout the week. So there's a lot more available via PowerShell to manage a Server Core system. And there are more roles and features available. So Server Core Windows Server 2012 now has full Active Directory certificate services support. There's Active Directory Rights Management Server, Windows Server Update Services, Routing and Remote Access Server is available, as well as three of the sub-roles of Remote Desktop Services. So the Connection Broker, the Licensing Service, and Virtualization Host are all now available on Server Core. So we've added a lot more roles and features there. Like I said, PowerShell is installed by default, so it's available and can be run there. On the other end of the spectrum there, you have server with a GUI. Essentially, this is the equivalent of full server in Server 2008 R2. And as I'll get into some more when we talk about some of the changes we made around a minimal server interface, really, it's there for backwards compatibility. The GUIs are taking more and more resources and bringing in more and more dependencies and taking resources away from a server running as a server. So really the direction we're trying to take things is run those fancy GUIs that have all those dependencies on your client machines or a dedicated server box and let your servers be servers and remotely manage them. So looking at the configuration levels that are available, at the top end you have server with a GUI, sort of your classic full server. You get the Metro style shell on there, you can install the desktop experience and get the full on client experience, including the app store and the ability to run Metro applications. In the middle, we have a new layer or a piece of functionality called the minimal server interface. Has anybody tried this yet? Seen this? A couple hands? All right. That's no fair. He's actually on part of the team. And essentially what minimal server interface is it uninstalls Explorer and Internet Explorer. So you're running essentially server with a GUI without the GUI. So you still have MMC locally, you still have Server Manager locally, you still have most of your control panel applets local. So you can still use your GUI management tools and everything to manage the system locally if you need to. So this is useful if for some reason you can't move to Server Core. For instance, you have a third-party app that doesn't have remote management capabilities and you still need to run an MMC locally on the system. This allows you to move down from server with the GUI, get some of the patching and management benefits of not having as much installed on the system while still being able to run the tools locally. So it provides a way to start transitioning to Server Core. Then down at the bottom, we have Server Core as before, but now they're actually integrated. So you can install Server Core and post-installation, you can move up to minimal server interface or you can move up to server with a GUI by installing some features. If you start with server with a GUI, you can move down to Server Core. So you can uninstall and convert the box to Server Core. So one of the benefits of being able to move in between here, there's actually a variety of ways you can use this and the way some of the TAP customers have been using this. One thing you can do is you could start with server with a GUI, do all your configuration, get the box set up how you want it, and then when you're ready to move into production, convert it down to Server Core and get the benefits of the fewer patches and fewer reboots that Server Core provides. It also lets you have a single image. So rather than having to have a master image of Server Core and a master image of server with a GUI and have to keep those updated with changes to your apps and you know, antivirus and things like that. You can have a single image, then during deployment time, you decide whether you want server core or full server. Also, if you've deployed server core or even full server and something changes in what that server needs to run, you can then convert either down to server core or up to full server. So if you do determine you need the GUI or MMC support, you can convert upwards. If you decide I no longer need to run, say, fax server, you can convert down to server core. So there's various ways you can take advantage of this in your environments. Question? Question was, what happens with the patching when you move from server core to, say, server with a GUI? So if you're at server with a GUI and applied any patches and convert down, those patches will still be there on disks. When you convert back up, they'll be available there. If a bunch of new patches have come out, you will want to run the Windows update processing, apply the new patches. So transitioning between server core and server, you can use Server Manager remotely if you're going from server core up to server with a GUI, or if you're at server with a GUI, you can just go in and uninstall the graphical shell and the graphical management tools and infrastructure converts you to server core. You can also do this via PowerShell. So full server to server core, you essentially uninstall that graphical tools and management infrastructure, server GUI management infra, and tell it to restart. It does require a reboot. Server core to full server, you install the two pieces, the management infrastructure and the shell, and have it restart. And you can do this in a single command line. So let me switch over here. All right, so right now I have two virtual machines up. I have a server named scdemo-server, and I have another server I'm going to use for management. And so if I go into remove roles and features and point it at scdemo-server, you'll see under user interfaces and infrastructure, management tools and infrastructure, and graphical shell are both installed. If I tell it to uninstall the, so what I did was I just clicked graphical management tools and infrastructure, and so it's going to tell me what exists above that that depends on graphical management tools and infrastructure. So it's going to tell me it has to uninstall the graphical shell, it has to uninstall Windows PowerShell ISE. So I'm going to tell it to go ahead and remove those, tell it to restart. Click remove. I'll go over here to start it on the other system and pull up performance monitor, and you'll see it will get going here. And my hard drive and my laptop here is chugging away. But you can see it's starting to uninstall. And if I go over here, one of the things I want to point out is if you run So if you run dism git features, for those of you that have used server core and used this command on a full server installation in the past, you'll see it's now listing the feature packages for server core package on my full server install, whereas in the past, server core would have shown this, but a full server installation would have shown Windows Foundation there. So they're integrated now, and this is going to chug along for a few minutes here. But what I'll do is I'll use my Hyper-V time machine and skip ahead a bit. And so the snapshot here is basically after the reboot as it's coming back up to the logon screen. So when I log on, you can see I now have server core. And actually, there's a new command line tool called setres that lets you reset your display settings had to do some wacky drawings. Okay. So if I try to run MMC or Server Manager, they're no longer installed on the system. If I PowerShell will be there though. Let me increase the font size a little here. If I do install Windows feature, and I'll try and install WDS because I know that does not run on server core, I'll do a what if. And so it will come up and tell me it can install Windows deployment services. There's two sub-roles, deployment server and transport server. But then it's also going to tell me that it also has to install graphical management tools and interfaces. So essentially, this will convert the system up to minimal server interface. If I go back over to this box, and I now go to add roles and pick the same server, which is now running server core. If I try and do Windows deployment services, you see server manager is going to tell me the same thing. You have to install graphical management tools and infrastructure if you want that. I will pick fax server because I know that's one of the ones, the only role actually that requires the full GUI shell. So you'll see it's going to install print server because it has a dependency on that, graphical management tools and infrastructure, as well as the full graphical shell. So that would convert me all the way up to server with a GUI if I wanted to install those. So what I will do, we'll see how long the next section of slides take, but I'll start it converting back up again. Restart, install. So you can see it's gotten busy again. So I'll switch back to the slides and we'll see if that finishes before I'm done here. So it's very easy to transition between server core and full server. I'll talk some more about how Server Core is built and some of the ways to transition back up in the later set of slides. But it's very easy to move in between now. It's no longer a decision you have to make at install time. So the other new piece of functionality that I've talked about is remembering back to that layer diagram is the minimal server interface. And really the way to think about this is it's the server with a GUI option without the GUI. So although it looks a lot like Server Core and could be considered Server Core with MMC and Server Manager available, it's really much closer to Server with a GUI. So there's a reason that it was that big box in between. When you convert from Server with a GUI down to Server Core, you're uninstalling about 4 gigabytes worth of functionality. When you convert from Server with a GUI down to minimal server interface, you're uninstalling about 300 megabytes. So that's why you get some of the patching benefits, but there's still a lot of functionality that's installed that you would not have with Server Core. So really, it's full server without Windows Explorer or Internet Explorer. And like I mentioned, this enables you to start that transition to Server Core, removing dependencies on the shell and Internet Explorer in your applications. You know, we're working with ISVs to get them to remove these sorts of dependencies in all of their applications as well, and enable full remote management. So it will give you some higher availability than you might have with running the server with a GUI option. And converting to server graphical shells, very straightforward. You can use Server Manager if you're on server with a GUI locally or remotely. You can do it from PowerShell by uninstalling the one server-gui-shell package. This does, like converting to Server Core, it does require a restart. You can install it just as easily, and you can go from Server Core up to minimal server interface as well. Now, for those of you that raised your hands when I asked about Server Core, you'll be familiar with some of these limitations. You have some of these same limitations in Server Core when you're using Notepad and RegEdit on Server Core. So the common dialog box is there and functional in MMC and Notepad and RegEdit and things like that. However, the networking piece of it does have a dependency on Internet Explorer, so you can't do networking through the common dialog box. You can use net NetUse, NetShare, and those things to connect up to resources. Any UI that has a dependency on a shell namespace extension will not work. So probably the biggest one here that most people will be looking for is control panel networking is not available in minimal server interface. That's an Explorer shell namespace extension, so it will not run on minimal server interface because Explorer is not there. Now, the networking team did do a lot of work and created a set of PowerShell commandlets, so you don't have to use NetSH anymore. They've got a great set of PowerShell commandlets, and those PowerShell commandlets have full parity with the networking networking control panel app. So anything you can do in the UI, you can now do using the networking PowerShell commandlets, including things that you couldn't do in NetSH, like manage your bindings and reorder network bindings. Internet Explorer is not available, as I've mentioned a couple times, so any links in the UI will not work, and help isn't available. Help is now HTML help and has been for the last few releases, and so anytime you're trying to access help, because IE is not there, there's no HTML engine, it's not available. And some of your file associations and protocol handlers are not there, again, because of Internet Explorer not being there, HTTP, file colon, and help files. And much like in Server Core, minimal server interface, there are a bunch of DLLs that get uninstalled. So there are APIs removed from the system, and certain apps may have some dependencies on those. So if you have in-house line of business apps that you've developed, what you can do is check the dependencies on those. And there's a tool called Dumpbin in the Windows SDK you can use. There's also a freeware tool called Dependency Walker that's available. And then test your applications on the minimal server interface. So we've done a lot of testing internally with the Microsoft applications, and then with each release of Windows, there's a full set of application compatibility tests that get run. So that runs a bunch of third-party apps, and really we found that most apps do work fine on the minimal server interface. Some of the setup installers don't always work correctly because they have dependencies on IE because they want to, at the end of setup, take you out to their website to advertise all their additional functionality you can purchase. But what you can do is then run setup during in server with a GUI, and then once setup's done, convert down to minimal server interface, and it will work fine. The IE dependency is really the most common thing that we've found. And there is a new registry entry that you can use to actually detect which configuration level you're at, because this is no longer a setup time decision. This is a runtime change, so at any time, while the server is running, the administrator could go along and convert from server with a GUI down to server core, up to minimal server interface. So you can actually do detection through the registry under Windows NT current version server levels. You can see the server core values are always set today because server core is the lowest level. Server GUI management is the equivalent of minimal server interface, so that will be set at minimal server interface or above. Then server GUI shell is there when you're at the full graphical shell. Now, if you're using group policy and have group policy scripts and things that you may want to behave differently, depending on which level the server is running at, you can actually use the Win32 server features class and query that. And server GUI shell has an ID of 99. Server GUI management infrastructure, basically minimal server interface, has an ID of 478. The link there is the Server 2008 R2 link. That will get updated sometime, probably right around RTM of Windows Server 2012. But these are the IDs that if you want to start experimenting with it. And then this slide summarizes the local shell capabilities. So I want to stress that this is local because things like Server Manager you can now use to remotely manage and add and remove your roles. MMC has a lot of remote capabilities. So locally on Server Core, you get Command Prompt and PowerShell. When you convert up to minimal server interface, that then adds Server Manager, MMC, and some of your control panel functionality. Server with a GUI sort of gives you all the local management functionality. And then Desktop Experience, if you're familiar with that, adds a lot of the client functionality. So in Server 2012, it's going to add, in addition to Media Player, it adds the App Store and support for Metro-style applications. let's go ahead and take a look at minimal server interface. And so this has finished. This was my server box. So let me log on. And you'll see it's now back to full server. Let me cancel out of here. So I'm going to use that same server again and convert it to the minimal server interface. And this goes much quicker, so we'll be able to watch this go during the demo, because this is, again, only about 300 megabytes compared to 4 gigabytes. Tell it to restart, tell it to remove. And all right. So while that's running, I don't know if anybody has noticed, but the server I'm using as my management server is actually configured with the minimal server interface. So you can see I don't have a system tray or a taskbar or anything down here, but I have been running Server Manager, happily managing my remote machine. I have PowerShell started. I closed PowerShell. Let me bring PowerShell back here. All right. So if I do a git Windows feature in PowerShell, you'll see down here, Server Graphical Shell is uninstalled. The graphical management tools and infrastructure is there. And I can launch MMC. I can add and remove my snap-ins, and you'll see you have all the default snap-ins are here and available. I'll just add computer management for now. And you'll see this came up pretty quickly over here, so I'll get there in a minute. I can expand out, you know, I can use Event Viewer to look at my event logs. All available. I can manage my shares. So under Device Manager, it's fully there. So if I need to configure advanced properties on like a network driver or something, that's all available. I can manage my services using the GUI tools. So I have full MMC and Server Manager available. I go back over to this one since it's rebooted. You can see I didn't change the startup type for a Server Manager, so by default I'm getting Server Manager and MMC, or Server Manager and Command Prompt have started. So you do have that available, and you can go under Tools and use that to launch your various MMCs rather than just running MMC and picking a snap-in. And if I go try and run help, you'll see it comes up and tells me to run this tool. I first have to install the graphical shell. Now if I try and go to the Server Manager forums, I get the same thing. If I run MMC, you can see GUI shell has been disabled. Some features aren't available. I should go install the shell if I want full functionality. You know, and Explorer is no longer available. If I try and run Internet Explorer, is no longer there. The folder's empty. Let me start regedit here. Now if I go into the registry, software. And go under server. See, I now have server levels, and you see server core and server GUI management are both set. So I've been using minimal server interface to remotely manage my server virtual machine. So that's server minimal interface. Now, another piece of functionality that's very useful in Windows Server 2012 is features on demand. So in the past, when you installed Windows Server or even Windows Client, all your roles, features, optional components are installed in the Windows side-by-side folder, and that's under Windows WinSXS. I'm just going to call it Windows side-by-side because it's much easier to say. So I'm just going to flip back here quickly. You can see these are all the components that are available to add and remove functionality on my machine. There's a lot there. When you install something, it gets hard linked from under this folder, and the hard link is what gets added into System 32. But this can take up a lot of space on your server boxes, especially if you're deploying a lot of virtual machines. So if you're deploying virtual machines and you know those are all going to be, say, front-end web servers, there's really no reason for you to have copies of Active Directory and print server and fax server times how many other virtual machines you may have using up disk space across all those VMs. So what you can actually do with Windows Server 2012 is use features on demand to remove those from the side-by-side store. So you can remove unneeded roles and features, reducing your on-disk footprint or reducing your virtual machine size, and maximizing, optimizing your virtual machines. And there is a Technic article that goes into this in some detail, and I will be talking some more about it here. And so some of you may have been wondering about server core, how it's a minimal footprint. You know, now I can convert in between them. What does that mean? Do I still have a small footprint server core? And essentially what we've done is the server core installation option that you get during setup is created using features on demand. So during the media creation process, we actually use features on demand to remove all the roles and features that are only supported on server with a GUI. So features on demand is used internally actually as part of the building of Windows Server 2012. So that removes everything from the side-by-side folder, maintains the smaller footprint of server core. And you can see in the examples here, and I'll show this in the demo, is anything that's not supported on server core, depending on the tool you use, will either be shown as removed or disabled with payload removed. And what you can then do is you can specify a source location for it to go install those things from. So once you remove something, there's still a way to bring it back. So say you've built a whole bunch of servers and removed, you know, the print server role, and now you determine that, oh, I really need print server on this particular server, you can bring that back. You can reinstall it from a remote location. And that's exactly how, if you install server core from setup, you would then specify remote location to convert up to server with a GUI, pulling in that 4 gigabytes of functionality that I talked about and converting into server with a GUI. So removing roles and features, you have to use the PowerShell commandlet for this. The uninstall Windows feature commandlet has a dash remove on it. So when you uninstall something and specify dash remove, it's going to remove the binaries for that from the side-by-side folder. Remove is not available in the PowerShell UI, so you do have to do this from PowerShell. And then if you want to reinstall a role or feature, there's a variety of sources you can use. So you can use Windows Update. If your server has an internet connection, it will go out to Windows Update and be able to pull down the role or feature you're trying to install. You can point to the WIM file. So on the DVD, under the sources folder, there's a file called install.wim. That's where it gets all the components and binaries from. So you can point to that. You can actually mount the WIM. So you could either put the mounted WIM or the WIM file on a file share out on your network and use it remotely to get the role or feature from, or you could actually point to a running server's side-by-side folder. And there is a group policy there on the slide that you can use to specify a location. So if your servers are domain joined, you can set a location that all servers will use to pull roles and features from that may have been removed. And so to mount the WIM, essentially you have to create a folder you're going to put this in. Then you have to determine the index of the server with a GUI option. So the server with the GUI option, this is very important, and it has tripped up some people in the beta, is you don't want to point at the server core image in the WIM file, because that's had all the additional roles and features removed from it. You have to point to the server with a GUI option, because that has the full side-by-side store and all the roles and features and whatever it is that you were trying to add to the system. And once server 2012 has shipped, the index number of the server with a GUI is not going to change unless you're customizing your WIMs and adding additional roles and or adding additional images to the WIM. So once you determine that, you shouldn't have to keep doing this particular step. Then you use the dism mount WIM command to actually mount the WIM file. And so that will copy the contents of install.wim up into the folder you've specified, and then you can point to the, under the mount folder, the Windows WIM side by side. And again, this is an important piece here. You actually have to point to not just the folder you've created and mounted into, you have to point to the full Windows WinSXS subfolder of that mount location for it to find the files. Now, using the WIM directly, again, you have to determine the index. Again, once we ship, that's not going to change unless you're customizing your WIMs. And then you essentially, for a source, you tell it WIM colon, the path to the WIM file, colon, the index number. And it will pull the files in from that. So, say you're using Server Manager, pointing to a Server Core installation, and you can, in Server Manager, specify an alternate source path, and you can see the dialog box that comes up here and gives you some good details, and I'll go into the .NET 3.5 piece of it in a few minutes. But you can tell Server Manager what path to use to go find those files when it's trying to remotely convert Server Core up to full server, for example. You can also use PowerShell with the dash source switch. So just like dash remove, there's a dash source where you specify the location. So if you've installed Server Core from the option during setup, you will have to specify a source to get a roller feature and allow it to convert up to server with a GUI. Or, you know, if you want the full GUI shell, you'd have to specify the source to convert up to that. Let's go take a look at that. Close that. So I also have a Server Core machine that I've installed from the Server Core option during setup. You see MMC is not there. Let me go ahead and start PowerShell. If I do a git Windows feet, oops. Windows feature. You'll see that graphical management tools, desktop experience, and server graphical shell are not installed, and I actually have to make this window wider. You have to have a wide enough window. Sorry, I'm going to have to make the font a little smaller. I'm going to be scrolling all over the place. It will be just as hard to see. There we go. All right. So hopefully you can still see this from the back, but you'll see these are listed as removed. And you'll see there's a bunch of other things listed as removed because I installed from setup this particular Server Core install. And if I go over here and do the equivalent dism command, the S again. You can see things are showing up as disabled with payload removed. Now if I go, just to prove I'm pointing to the server core box, you can see the computer name's sc-demo-sc. I can back over to my management node here, start to add roles and features. I pick sc-demo-sc. Let's convert up to minimal server interface. Click next. You'll see it's come up and detected that I've removed things from the side-by-side folder and giving me a warning that I probably need to specify a source location, so I know I should go do that versus letting it fail during the process. And here's the specify alternate source path hiding down here at the bottom. If I click that, I get that dialog box that was in the slide. But before we do that, I'm going to go over here and actually Windows feature. I'm going to say server GUI management infra. I'm not going to specify the source, so we can go ahead and see it fail. And what happens here is it's going to chug along and start processing it, and 68% is the key point in the process. So this is when it's going off and trying to get the source files, either from your side-by-side folder if you haven't removed things, or it's going to be checking the source that I did not specify, or it's going to go out to Windows Update and try and access it. And this is on a private network here on my laptop, so I didn't specify a source. It's trying to go out to Windows Update. It's not going to find Windows Update here in a minute, and it will fail out and give us the error message momentarily here. While it's doing that, I will get this set up. So I'm going to point to the WIM file. So my source is going to be WIM colon d colon backslash sources backslash install.wim WIM colon 4. There we go. So you can see, failed to add the specify feature. Source files cannot be downloaded. So that's because it's fallen back and tried Windows Update. Question here in the middle. Yes? So the question was, is it possible to distribute the extra content from an internal Windows Server Update Server, WSUS? Unfortunately, in Windows Server 2012, that's not supported because the way the process works for this is when it goes out to Windows Update or one of these other services, it just pulls down a single file or the files needed from the components, whereas WSUS, it would have to pull down these very large packages, unpack them, and find the files within that. So performance reasons, it's not available. We are looking into making some changes in that process so that it would be supported in the future. But you can put the WIM file or a mounted WIM on a file server and use group policy to point to that. So I will go ahead and start this and tell it to reboot. And it does take some time because it is, in addition to just installing these, it is having to copy them from that source as well. So it's going to chug away here. But you can see how, you know, both Server Manager and the PowerShell commandlets will tell you that there's a source missing, that you need to specify a source, and the dialog box in Server Manager gives you some pointers as to what that source, what supported sources can be used. And so I will let this run. I have a little more to talk about, and then we can switch back to this and look at it while we do some Q&A. So those of you that have installed the beta or the release candidate for Windows Server 2012 may have noticed that .NET 3.5 is not in the image. That's because .NET 3.5 has actually been removed via features on demand. So you will see it's there, it's in the list of things, but you have to use features on demand to pull it in. And so on server, there's an application compatibility shim that when you try and run an installer or a program that requires .NET 3.5, it will detect that request and pop up a dialog box telling you, you need to go install this via features on demand. Here are some locations you can get it from. Now, this actually works a little differently than the in-the-box features on demand because .NET 3.5 has been special cased. So there's only two available installation sources. So you can use Windows Update, or there's actually a different folder on the media that you can point to. So sources/SXS has all the .NET 3.5 binaries in it. So it's not in any of the images, and the reason for that is there's already .NET 4.5 in the Windows Server 2012 image. Not everybody necessarily needs two versions of .NET, so to keep the on-disk footprint smaller for both server core, minimal server interface, and server with a GUI, it's been removed. You only have to install it if you need it and take the extra disk space. So you can install it both from Windows Update or from the media. There's a couple white papers there. The first one's pretty much focused on server. The second one covers both client and server because the same thing is applicable in client. So if I go over here and I'll let that keep running. Oops. If I go over here and look at my server manager again, or PowerShell, you will see that on my management server that's running minimal server interface, I installed it from setup. Here's .NET Framework 3.5. If I scroll over here, you'll see it's shown as removed. So by default, you'll always have something removed when you go look at your list of roles and features. And if I go back into Server Manager, as I close Server Manager, if I go back into Server Manager, if I manage the local machine, you will see .NET 3.5 is there. So you can install it through this, but again, you have to provide a source for it. So this machine's rebooting, so we're making progress there. There we go. So .NET 3.5 is removed via features on demand, although it works a little differently for reinstalling it. So to summarize a little bit, and then I'll open up for questions and go back to see how our conversion of server core up to minimal server interface is doing. Server core is the default deployment option. Use your remote management tools to manage it. PowerShell's there as well now with over 2,300 commandlets, so it gives you a lot more capabilities for managing server core. If there's something that you have to run that's not supported on server core, then minimal server interface is the recommended configuration. You know, don't run the shell and Internet Explorer and things on your server and a lot of GUI tools. Again, remotely manage it as much as possible. Keep all those dependencies and fancy UIs that do fancy things on your client machines or a dedicated server for management purposes. And then, you know, server with a GUI is there if you need it for certain roles like remote desktop or applications or processes that may require it. And then features on demand is a way that you can optimize your on-disk footprint and your virtual machines to save on disk space. So lots of new functionality around deploying and configuring Windows Server 2012. And this is getting closer, so I'll just let it keep running and open it up if anybody has any questions. Question up front here. So the question was, if you install the release candidate, what do you do when the production version comes? Do you mean, can you upgrade to the final release version? Upgrade is not supported. So you'll have to reinstall, yes. What's that? So this is now rebooted. This is my server core demo machine, and you can see I'm now minimal server interface. Server manager has started. If I start PowerShell, and do a git Windows feature, you'll see a bunch of things are still listed as removed, including the desktop experience. I can go in, if I know I'm never going to install server graphical shell, I can go ahead and remove that. It doesn't actually have to be installed to use the remove switch. You can do uninstall Windows feature, the name of something dash remove, just to flush the binaries out. Question? So the question is, why haven't we switched to PowerShell as the default shell? We're sort of on a path to that. So in Server 2008 Server Core, we did not have PowerShell or .NET. In Server 2008 R2, we added PowerShell and .NET support, but made them optional, not on by default. In Windows Server 2012, they're now installed by default because we have 2300 commandlets. You can do most anything from PowerShell and the commandlets now, but we wanted to keep the flexibility up for those that have come from some of the previous releases and may want a very small footprint and haven't moved to PowerShell yet. You can uninstall them. And with features on demand, you could even remove them from the image and create a very small server core. With the direction management and everything's heading, I'm confident that in the next version, it will be the default shell for server core. Question? Yes, you can do upgrades from 2008 R2 to Windows Server 2012, and you can go server core to server core or full server to server with a GUI. If you were running a full server machine and you wanted it to be server core in Server 2012, you'd have to upgrade to server with a GUI and then do the conversion process to go down. Just because we don't want, during upgrade, stuff to disappear on you that you may have wanted. Question? Sconfig is still available, and sconfig, actually, because they're integrated now, you have sconfig in server core, minimal server interface, and server with a GUI. It only has server with a GUI now, but sconfig is there. Yes. Other questions? Over here. For server core or for server with a GUI or both? Server core, you can remove about a gigabyte. So you can, I guess if you took out PowerShell and .NET as well, you could get it down close to what Server 2008 R2 was. It would be between 3 and 4 gigabytes. If on full server, or I keep calling it full server, if on server with a GUI, you only used one role and removed everything else using features on demand, you would remove about 1.5 gigabytes. Other questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the last session of the afternoon. And we'll stick around for a bit if anybody has questions or anything.